755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty.
Welcome back to 755 is real. It's been a while. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic, with my co-host Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's up, Eric?
I'm freezing cold in my garage right now.
Freezing cold? It's cold out in Seattle?
35 degrees, and my kids got school in the office, so I'm in the garage, and it's had to turn my space heater off.
We had our first cold night here in Atlanta, relatively. I haven't turned the heater on yet, but it got to, I think, around 40 last night.
That's happening fast, and it's getting dark early.
Oh, man. Turn back the clocks.
Yeah.
Last night I looked, it felt like it was, you know, 11 o'clock at night. It was 7.
7:30.
It had been dark for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I do not like it, man. I hate that. Just keep daylight savings time year round, man. Why? I just don't understand it.
I wonder if we'll bang it soon. Everybody's over it.
I know. But I hate this time of year where it turns and it starts getting cold and all that. Anyway, we are seeing the baseball winter that both of us predicted is already starting to unfold. Options have been declined on all the mid-level kind of aging players or just mid-level players.
And some good ones, too.
Yes, and there's whispers of a whole lot more guys than usual becoming non-tendered free agents next month. And very few guys, I think, like we talked about, are expected to get massive contracts this winter.
No.
Things are different.
Yeah, I mean, you had to feel like it was coming. And there's so much uncertainty, and teams took those big hits this year. I feel like it's going to be the most boring offseason to pay attention to of all time.
You know, like you said, teams took the big hit. And it would be one thing if we were over the virus now and they could pencil in next season and they knew the fans were coming back. But you got to add that on top of last year, and they still have no idea whether fans will be allowed in or will they be allowed in like a limited basis, like the NLCS and World Series? Will they not be allowed in at all? We just don't know. So, I mean, if you're a team,
I think teams are real frustrated with the way those negotiations went too. You know, they're not forgetting that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if it's even close on a guy, whether to pick up an option.
Gone.
They're just not doing it. They're like, let's just start with this. Let's start with this baseline. We'll get to this point and then we'll go from there. But it's going to be so slow, like you said, because they've got to wait. If you're a team.
Teams wait anyway.
Why wouldn't you wait until you get a better idea of where we're going to be? At least maybe a month from now, you have a lot better idea where we're going to be as far as fans and the virus and all that. Like right now, you got no idea.
Yeah. And if you look at a guy like Brad Hand, I mean, he had a 2 ERA at 21. The dude's nasty.
Yeah.
For $10 million, you know. I mean, I think that's probably why this is going to be AA's dream offseason, because there's going to be so many guys available on those one-year deals late.
And the other thing is, if you're a team and you're looking to fill holes, if you've got a couple of holes, why wouldn't you wait until you see who's non-tendered? Because there's going to be a flood of non-tendered guys.
Be a flood of non-tenders, free agents that can't get deals. I mean, Ozuna's going to – he's not going to get nearly what he would in a normal offseason.
And if you're him, you wait. Unless an AL team makes you a big offer now, you wait, because – there could be twice as many teams in a market for a DH.
Yeah.
A month from now, if the players and baseball agree to do the DH for next year. But we don't even know when they're going to discuss it.
No, I'm telling you, it's going to be slow.
You know, there could be a signing here or there. But, I mean, I could see, for instance, and I'm just throwing this out there because it might not happen at all, but the Braves could sign an Adam Wainwright now, early. Something that isn't necessarily affected by the factors we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he takes a one-year deal for seven or eight, and you feel like it's a good deal for both sides either way. But guys that are trying to, you know, get career contracts and maybe have bounce back years, things like that, I just don't think it's going to be there.
The end of the line, the end of the career guys are really the only ones I could see signing right now, because the guys who you know, are on the fence as far as multi-year deals, and they could get a whole lot more if guys
fans.
DHs. And there's just so much indecision right now.
Yeah.
And like we said, the flood of non-tendered free agents that could come next month. If you're a GM, why would you sign a guy now when there might be a better guy available for the same price a month from now?
Well, nobody even claiming Hand on a 1 year 10. I mean, that's pretty insane.
I know, man. And that just said right there so much about the market, I think. The fact that no team claimed him.
No, it's, yeah.
Because if a team had claimed him, they wouldn't have to pay the buyout either.
No. His team. I mean, it's just, they did, it's, that's how it's going to be.
Yeah. Crazy, man. This is going to be a weird offseason.
Yeah.
But first, Dodgers. I think a lot of teams don't realize, a lot of people don't realize, the Dodgers hadn't won a World Series in 32 years. They may realize it at the end when the announcers were all talking about it. But before that, you know, you always hear people talk about the Braves haven't won a World Series since 95. The Dodgers hadn't won one since 88. I know they'd been to some recently and the Braves had not. Fact is, they hadn't won one since 88, as much money as the Dodgers have spent on payroll.
Yeah, they've been probably the best team or the second best team or third best team in the league for like 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how hard it is to win a World Series. You know, I know it's frustrating for Braves fans not getting there this year because it felt like they had a really good shot, but it's so hard to win a World Series, even when you've put a team that good out there like the Dodgers have for so many years in a row.
Well, as we predicted here, after the Dodgers came back to beat the Braves in the LCS, not that we were going out on a limb with it or anything, but I thought it was pretty – I thought it would have taken some really huge errors and injuries for the Dodgers to not beat the Rays. They were just a better team. I mean, the Rays were doing the whole bullpenning every night. And well, the Dodgers ended up doing that too.
Yeah.
A lot of it. But the Dodgers just had too much depth, too much experience, too much balance across the board, too much filth coming in from the bullpen. And then they had a couple of authentic starters, you know, rather than trying to bullpen every game.
For me, it was just the bats they had. I mean, they just did the same thing they did to the Braves. They just did not give away at bats and just kept grinding pitchers down. It was, you know, it's hard to deny that they were the best team this year.
Yeah, and those at bats too, with when you know Rays relievers were pitching so much, they couldn't really afford to have 8, 9, 10 pitch at bats, you know, as much as they were being used.
Well, that was a good thing, though, that somebody was kind of bringing up was, you know, there's all the you know, because they took Snell out and there's all these stats for third time through the order, but I don't know how many stats there are for facing the same relievers in a 7 day span and seeing these same relievers over and over and what their chances third time in a series, you know?
Yeah. It was all unprecedented.
Yeah.
I thought that was. And I can't believe we've seen some people come out, obviously some really stats, metrics, saber intensive people, because it takes a hardcore person to defend that move.
No.
Because I just thought that was one of the stupidest moves I've seen in a huge game in a long time. I
almost turned the TV off.
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was the worst. It's not the state of the game because it was an extreme example. But it was an extreme example of the worst of the game right now.
Yeah.
Just not letting a manager – or a man, not letting him. It was the manager decided. You know, it was a plan made beforehand. And the manager either did not have the power to change the plan or did not have the guts to go with what he was watching. And it's in his mind, he's so already fixated or the plan is already made up. So he's not using his own mind and watching and going – you know what? This guy's dealing right now. We never thought he'd be dealing like this.
Fire me.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know what I mean? If that's me, and it's easy to say this sitting in my garage recording a podcast, but if I'm managing that game and the move is to take him out or you're fired, I'm getting fired, but I'm trying to win that game. And there's no chance you can take him out when he's that good. The three guys coming up, he'd already struck all three of them out twice. Like, there was nothing saying. I feel like you have to let him lose that game.
There was nothing about it. There was nothing about it that made sense to me.
It was just 73 pitches.
God, he was dealing, man. And then the look on his face, too.
Yeah.
Not only that, you have the potential of losing that guy because his first chance to go elsewhere, if he knows this is how it's always going to be there. You know, he said the right things afterwards, but the look on his face was total disgust. It's like, this is the biggest night maybe of my entire career.
No, it was a career moment. Like, that was a career-defining start he was about to have, and it just got cut short. And that, for me, that was just as frustrating as the move being bad, was not getting to see that start play out and see if he can beat that team. And that's what makes great baseball, is watching a guy like that be as hot as he can be, go up against the best lineup in the game. And all of a sudden, somebody just hit the pause button and made a different move. You know, I mean, that's why I almost turned the TV off, because I wanted to see what happened so bad, and it just ended.
It'd be like if you took Smoltz out in the seventh inning of game 7 of the 91 World Series against Jack Morris, you know?
It wasn't even a conversation either. There wasn't even going back and forth. It was just, you're out.
And I thought Snell's look was, oh my God, I know this was the plan, but are you serious? Because he had this look on his face.
Right now,
are you watching me?
Yeah. You can't pitch any better than that to possibly change anybody's mind in that situation. If that wasn't convincing, nothing would be.
It's taken Glavine out in the sixth inning of, you know, the game 6 of the 95 World Series.
Yeah, I couldn't even come up with an analogy. I tried. I mean, that's the first managerial move or anything I've watched in any sports that I've lost sleep over. I mean, I seriously tossed and turned that night. Like, what the hell did I just watch?
And I think secretly, privately, I think most metrics intensive people, and I'm not arguing against metrics, because I think they're great for the game. There's so much good information. But this was the exact thing that, of those of us who think that they're used too much sometimes when you don't allow a manager to use his instincts at all.
Yeah.
And I just thought that even sabermetric people in a really tough spot, because they're left to defend this. And, you know, secretly they're going, yeah, I wouldn't have made that move either.
But you don't have to defend it. Just say, yeah, you know, it's not perfect. What we do isn't perfect. That's the hard part for me about watching these discussions between these two sides in baseball. Nobody ever admits they're wrong. Nobody's like, you know, the numbers probably dicked that one up. It's just people will just die on that hill of defending these stats and saying, well, you know, the third time through the order last time, he left him in and look what happened.
Right.
You know, or they took Kershaw out or left Kershaw. Like, they'll point to other examples, but you just look at that situation by itself. And I don't know anybody that can just say he should have come out of that game with a straight face.
Yeah, the third time through is just, if that's what you're going to do, then you literally could have had anybody manage that game.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You could have had anybody manage, just turn it over to somebody else, let him go home.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said whoever won the LCS was going to beat the Rays in the World Series. You did too. And it played out. And I think the Rays would have beat the Rays in 6 games or less in the World Series as well. The Rays have a really good team.
They do.
And the rookie, I always forget
his Rosarena, Randy Arizona.
I had it down during the World Series. I'll say it right. Rosarena. He did keep it going. I couldn't believe he kept it going, but he did. He was amazing.
Yeah.
That was one of the most amazing postseason performances ever. If he would have done that and they would have won the World Series, can you imagine? This guy's a legend.
He's a legend. I mean, he's already a legend for doing that.
He's going to have a tough time ever matching that in his career. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Or the dude's a Hall of Famer, and this is coming out party.
Yeah. Well, he looked – it didn't look fluky what he was doing.
No, it didn't. He was hitting pitches to both fields, and he was hitting everything.
The Cardinals traded this guy.
Yeah, no. That's another thing that's tough about baseball, is when you trade a guy like that. You know, teams are so afraid to make these moves now because a guy's like that burning them. Exactly.
It underscored for some GMs why you don't trade a –
Was he a big prospect, though? I don't know much about his history. Was he a huge prospect?
No, not like – he wasn't like a like an Acuna. But it's why you don't trade, you know, an Ozzy Albies.
Right.
Or an Austin Riley. Because that's what you fear right there. Like an Austin Riley, for instance. Maybe they were kind of that guy. He was that kind of guy. You trade Austin Riley, and he has a moment like that. Is it probably going to happen? No, but it could. And that's why you scared to death to trip. Mozeliak, the Cardinals guy, GM, said, yeah, we're going to take a look again. We're going to go over our evaluation process. I mean, it was that bad. It was that glaring that he said, we made a mistake.
Yeah, I think we blew that. We're gonna take a look.
But it's why you don't trade the Paches, you know, and the Acunas and the Albies, because you're scared, especially in this day and age where the game is skewed so young. And you're relying so much on guys to come up at age 22, 23 and play with you for 6 really affordable years that, man, you got to be sure before you trade a guy like that. Or you trade, you know, what they wanted for Real Muto. You know, when they wanted Ozzie Albies and Austin Riley, that kind of thing. I mean, look what ends up happening.
Yeah, Real Muto goes to Philly. You keep had a good year. Too,
but when you already know signed a guy that for 2 years and $14 million. And Darno outplayed Real Muto this year. You know? I mean, it's just you got to be careful with what you do when you trade young pieces for a player. It is a very hard job being a GM and making those decisions. And we've kind of seen both examples this year. You know, you don't trade for a guy like Real Muto and you end up looking golden.
Yeah.
You know, with Darno, you trade a guy like Betts. He goes over. Everybody knew you don't trade Betts, though. You know,
I feel like everybody knew that.
Everybody knew that. And he goes over and does exactly what he'd been doing. But
yeah, that's also the question, too, is do they even regret it? Or are they happy with, you know, getting under the luxury tax?
Oh, man. If they don't regret it, I know their fans do.
Yeah.
Their fans do. And that's it. There's something to that. You can be glad you're under the luxury tax, but if you pissed off tens of thousands of fans, you know, who are like, why are we going to even come back, you know, until you get good again, that kind of thing. But, yeah, but I think a lot of people didn't realize how long the Dodgers had gone. 7 years longer than Atlanta since winning a World Series. But when you go back so many times, people forget that. You know, it's most recent bias. And Dodgers have been so good lately when the Braves were rebuilding. So, look, when you look at all their regular players that are returning, except possibly free agents, Justin Turner, Jock Peterson, Kiki Hernandez, and all of their returning postseason starting pitchers, all of whom are between 23 and 27, except Kershaw. I think it's safe to assume the Dodgers are going to be favorites again, heavy favorites entering the NL entering next season, right?
Yeah. I feel like Urias might have been considered for MVP, the work he did out of the pen. Tremendous. He was incredible.
He was tremendous. And he'd been really inconsistent during the year, too. I talked to Charlie Steiner right before the LCS.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the Braves and Dodgers, and Charlie was going, Urias, we just don't know. We might get one night he's pitches, you know, he's unhittable. The next night he can't get an out or he's walking everybody. So
it might be a guy you could throw into that super reliever role that Andrew Miller kind of invented. You know, I mean, that might be his thing because he dominated in the playoffs.
Yeah. He was, Josh Hader.
Yeah.
But I would also bet the Braves' odds of winning the NL pennant will be better than they've been in a very long time.
Yeah.
Entering next year.
Yeah, I mean, they could meet up again with the Dodgers again and do the same thing next year.
Man, I know it's probably too soon. People don't want to hear it again. But the Braves had three chances to clinch the NLCS, man, and advance to the World Series. They had three chances.
I know.
And they were two runs shy of going to the World Series, man, against that Dodgers team.
I think that's where the experience worked, though. You know, the Dodgers, they knew how to handle that situation. They've been through all those games before. And they just kept grinding out at bats and making things happen.
Yeah, I had somebody mention, I said something about, you know, you need to have experience, a couple of experienced guys. And somebody said, you know, never mind experience. I just wanted young, talented guys. And I said, well, it's kind of ironic you said that when the Dodgers just beat them with experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you saw some inexperience cost the Braves, like you did that base running play, just not understanding, but just losing track of the moment right there. Just that little slip up, how much it cost the team, just little things like that, that I felt like the Dodgers just didn't give the Braves those opportunities.
Yeah. Two of those were by
young guys.
I mean, Dansby, you know, he doesn't make mistakes like that, but he made one. Ozzie, and the other by Ozuna.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he's an Air Force bat.
Yeah. But even then, you know, he hasn't been in those big. The importance of that one run, you know, you just never know in the playoffs how much it could change the whole game. You know, little things like that. And the Dodgers being through it so many times, I think, really helped them.
And the Dodgers seized on those moments, too, with experienced guys doing it. Yeah.
Every window they got, they capitalized on.
I will say this. No team is better set up for long-term success than the Braves. Not even the Padres, when you consider the number of team-friendly contracts the Braves have. I'm starting with Acuna and Albies, you know. But then these young guys, they have under control for so long. I mean, Fried's not a free agent for four more years,
yeah,
which is hard to believe. Ian Anderson, I think it's four. I was just looking. Freed's going to be 30, 31 when he's free agent, dude. That's so unfair the way the system is.
Yeah, those injuries cost him, but that's probably why, you know, those injuries are also probably why you could, he'd be a guy that would be willing to sign a deal where you could extend him and have him for 6 or 7 years at something realistic.
But you're going to have 6 years of control, six more years of Ian Anderson before he's a free agent. You got Ozzie and Acuna for basically close to a decade, you know, with the options on the back end of their contracts.
$40.
Soroka. I mean, these guys are, you are set. Jesus. Then you got so many guys coming up too. And obviously Pache and.
Well, Bryce Wilson, what he showed, you know, I feel
man, he looked good.
Unless he has a terrible spring training, I feel like that playoff start had to buy him at least a month and a half of time next year to prove he's that guy.
Well, I mean, let's not forget Kyle Wright, too. I know he fell on his face big time in the big moment, but, man, he had some really good starts before that, including the one in the NLDS or the wild card series.
And getting beat by the Dodgers, that's nothing to hang your head on.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's an experience he's got to go through and get better from.
Yeah, you called that one. With you know, them not being aggressive like the Marlins were going to be, what was going to happen when he faced the Dodgers. But he's going to learn from that. He's a smart guy. So,
well, Bryce did opposite the next day. He just came at him.
Oh,
you know,
Jesus.
And he just came at him and challenged him. And I think every starter in the playoffs that did well against the Dodgers was real aggressive and challenging him and not letting him work those at bats and get into favorable counts. And yeah, that just caught up with Wright. But yeah, he showed a lot too.
Man, that start for Bryce Wilson, though, when you get to go into the offseason with that as your last time.
Right now.
I mean, how good are you feeling about your future, your confidence?
It's got to be through the roof. And knowing he can do that in that game, you know, that April start against the Phillies isn't going to feel that big a deal now. You know, he's going to know what he can do now.
I think he's probably forgotten the Philly one completely.
Yeah.
And then he watches the World Series and he watches the Dodgers beat up on the Rays. And he got, I totally handcuffed that team, man. They couldn't do anything against me.
Yep. Yeah, and he did it the way he did it. You know, I think that's a big lesson to learn, too, is when you – to learn your stuff's good enough to play in the big leagues and pitch in the big leagues. And that aggression of just – he just challenged them with his best stuff every pitch. I mean, just went right after him, and he learned he's good enough.
So when you consider the Braves' team-friendly contracts, the number of young starters that they have, and the revenues that were – going to be back at some point, either next year or the year after. It gives them the resources to add payroll each year, which was the stated plan, though I think that plan might be put on hold a year this year. The payroll had gone up for three straight years, and last year's would have been the highest ever in their history, about $150 million. That was before proration, though. But I think they're going to take a step back this year like almost
everybody
every
is.
Other team.
Yeah.
With the exception of, and I just thought about this morning, I heard someone mention the Mets might go after Realmuto. Think about this, the unique situation the Mets are in. New ownership, Cohen's coming in, they got approved. They didn't take the bath last year in losses.
No.
Last year didn't happen for them. So they step in, they're going to want to make a big splash in their first year, obviously. Now they're going to have fewer teams competing for the big players than ever before. They've got the golden opportunity the Mets do.
The pocket full of money and a bunch of cheap, really good players probably.
And they have no excuses not to spend it like other teams that absorbed huge losses last year.
That's not the mindset at all either.
Yeah. They're just coming in going, this is our chance. I mean, it's like it's laid out perfectly for them. If they can't do it this year, then the Mets are really going to Mets it up. If they can't do it this year, man.
No, I would think, you know, even – I was surprised even a guy like Brad Hand. I mean, I think that's perfect when you're in that position to just splurge a little bit. But there's going to be a ton of guys like that. So I think you kind of – I think they just wait. And I bet they'll be the team to watch and that's making the most moves this offseason for sure.
If they're not the team, the biggest team in free agency, then there's something wrong. You know, there's just they're in a totally unique situation. I can't remember a similar thing. You know, sure, some big pockets owners have taken over, but it's kind of like when the Dodgers got their massive TV deal that was so much bigger than everybody else's and they had new ownership and all that. It's kind of like that. And the Yankees have taken a step back as far as spending.
Yep.
It's kind of like that, even more so, though, to me, because every team lost a lot of money last year, you know.
Yeah, I think the 29 teams are just going to sit tight this offseason.
Maybe the Dodgers, because the you know their attendance was already huge, and it's going to be even bigger next year after winning the World Series.
Yeah,
you would think, as long as they let fans back in, and they have that massive TV contract.
Yep.
So they didn't take a bath. Obviously, they make so much money anyway. But still, this is a chance for the Mets to go in and sign like 4 or 5 huge free agents that other teams just are not going to compete for.
Yeah, and they could do something like sign Ozuna, where another team might not want to, and wear it for a year if there's no DH. Like they're a team that could actually do that, and the guy's got deep pockets. You know, it's not gonna break the bank. You know, to sign some of these deals that other teams are took that big hit, they're not gonna want to do it.
I mean, Real Muto, that's the one to me that they're the obvious team that should go get him, unless he just doesn't want to play in New York.
Most guys want to play where the money is.
Yeah, exactly. He's already been in Philly, you know.
Yeah.
It's only an hour further up the road.
Yeah.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors. Braves offseason needs. Let's start with their free agents. Ozuna, obviously. Tyler Flowers, Nick Markakis, Cole Hamels, and relievers Mark Melanson, Shane Green, Josh Tomlin, and Darren O'Day, who became a free agent when the Braves declined his $3.5 million option. And also, Charlie Culberson, versatile bench player. He opted for free agency rather than take a AAA assignment in an offseason. But we should say about Charlie, it's the same as last year where the Braves Braves told him, you know, we'd love to have you back. If you don't see another offer, you know, you don't get a major league contract or another place where you'd rather play or think the opportunity is better, then you're welcome back here, and they'll invite him to spring training and have, give him a chance to make a team. I could see that happening because he's got little kids. They live in suburban Atlanta. They make their home there. So he's back and forth between AAA and Major League team, no problem at all. So unless he has a chance to play on a big league team, a Major League contract, I could definitely see him coming back here. He's not.
You're
going
to lean toward that anyway if you're him, just because you know there's a lot of certainty to the situation. You know you're not going to get BS. They've already followed through on it in the past. So
right.
You know, I mean, there's this level of comfort. No, if he's good and they need him, I mean, he knows he's going to get a shot here. So I would see him coming back for sure.
Yeah, he's got little kids, and he already said they're not moving during. I'm not moving them during the season. So
that's a lot of work.
Yep. I think he's got 3. So the Braves are leaving the door open to him. The O'Day development, a lot of people kind of were surprised because he had a 1.10 ERA, 0.796 WHIP in 19 appearances. 22 Ks, 5 walks, 1 homer allowed, 16 and a third innings was. But I wasn't surprised only because of what we've just talked about, the economic landscape being what it is. That is like $1.2 million raise for him. And at his age, that $500,000 buyout's just easier to absorb. And they'll tell him, you know, we'd like to have you back, but at a far lesser deal. So,
yeah, and their bullpen doesn't suck. Yeah, if your bullpen sucked, then you wouldn't let a guy like that go. But when your bullpen's, I mean, we talked about it all year, how deep it is and what a job they did. You know, it's just not an immediate need.
If they bring him back, it would be, I mean, say you bring him back at a $1.5 million deal, then even with the buyout, you spent $2 million instead of $3.5. And in this economy, that matters, you know, because you're going to spend that money, you could sign another reliever too. But if they bring him back, it'll be because he's obviously still can do something, even with the 3-batter rule. He still is a good weapon to have in matchups in certain situations. But his intangibles are off the charts. I mean, he's a huge part of that bullpen as far as being the leader. The guy keeps it loose and keeps everybody tight-knit. So they bring him back, I think it'll have a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah, normally those are things that a team will make an effort to bring you back for, but they're not going to spend an extra $2 million for you to be a good guy.
Yeah. He's almost like having him, you know, a second, like Marty Reed's assistant bullpen coach. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's important. It's definitely a big thing, but it's just not something that, you know, teams are going to break the bank for. It's part of your, you know, cocktail you're bringing to the table, but it's not everything.
How important do you think it'll be to the Braves to bring back one or more from the group of Melanson, who's been outstanding for a year and 2.5 months that he's been with the Braves, Shane Green, who's been pretty damn good for that most of that same period. They both came over in those trades at the July 2019 deadline. And then the old guys, O'Day and Tomlin, who both bring a lot more than just on-mound performance. They had leadership and tangibles, all that. But how big do you think it'll be to sign one or more of those, particularly Melanson and Green?
Yeah, I mean, you can get Tomlin for free. I'd lean toward Melanson over Greens because he was closing and so good. But either one of them, you know, I mean, it's just going to be the same thing where teams, they're just going to wait and see what the price is. And if the price works for them, then I think you got to bring at least one of those guys back just to have that leadership and stability at the end of the game.
Yeah, Melanson is a,
especially with Will Smith struggling a little bit, you know. I mean, he wasn't completely lights out and had, you know, had a couple rough games in the playoffs. But Melanson was pretty damn good the whole time.
Yeah. So I think then, you know, if you don't bring them both back, which with you probably won't because of the cost, then you got a guy, you could bring a guy up. We've seen so many teams use these young guys, these young future starters, you know, or maybe they're future bullpen guys, but a guy like Kyle Muller is the guy that comes to mind for me. 6'7", throws close to 100, you know, or, you know, or Tucker Davidson, but Kyle Muller, I could definitely see being used at the, at, you know, the front end of the bullpen, not in a 6th, 7th inning role. At the start of his career, at the outset, and you can move Will Smith back further back, you know, to set up, or you could have Will Smith and Chris Martin close, or AJ Minter. You could use kind of a matchups closer if you can't afford Melanson, or you decide you can't afford him.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like Melanson or Minter, I feel like they got eyes on a bigger role for him after what he did this year. You know, it's, and he's not going to cost much.
And Chris Martin is on a 2-year deal.
Yeah,
so. He'll be back.
You want some of these guys, you know, 3-4 deep at the end of the game. You feel like you could rely on, but they just, you know, they had 7 this year, and that's kind of, it was great to have because the bullpen carried them through the first couple rounds of the playoffs. But
absolutely, and through the regular season when they were struggling with all the starters. And through the
regular season, yeah. I mean, the bullpen was so huge. I think you'd want to try to replicate that situation if you can. But again, man, money this year is just, it's not going to be the same.
The good news for them is the bullpen shouldn't be, knock on wood for them, barring. What is the chances you have of such a rash of injuries and stuff the second year in a row? But the bullpen shouldn't be so
as important.
To be so deep. It shouldn't. You shouldn't have to be 7 deep next year with the starters you're bringing back. You know, you should have with Fried, Soroka, Ian Anderson. You should have 3 starters right there that can go, you know, 6 innings a game instead of these second and third inning exits that you had so common last year.
Yeah, I mean, but it'd be nice to have, though, and I'm sure, if, you know, if the price is right, they'd love to have that again because that was awesome.
I'm sure it'll still be a priority having a top bullpen, no doubt. It was just so big for them this year.
Especially in today's game.
So much of the Braves offseason, we've alluded to this, revolves around Ozuna. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. And I don't think it can be resolved, at least as far as them re-signing them, until the Braves know whether or not there's going to be a DH. I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to give this guy a big contract for next year if you don't think you're going to have the DH.
My gut tells me it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, so far there's really no reason to think it's going to, although that could change, obviously, with one phone call. We saw how fast things changed last year.
Oh, I don't mean the DH. I mean the deal.
The deal.
Yeah, my gut tells me that. I don't know. I don't feel good about it. You
think an American League team will step up before?
Yeah, or a team with, you know, like the Mets that can just say they almost want to buy him away from the Braves and keep him off that team if they can. And if you're having to be careful and not knowing if you're going to have money or fans in the stands or there's going to be a DH and the Mets can be kind of reckless, they could just jump out and offer him 4 years while the Braves have to try to be patient.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a team that maybe doesn't emphasize defense as much as the Braves do.
Right.
You know, the Mets might say, you know, Mets might look past his defensive flaws and look at the bottom line, those offensive numbers, and go, we'd love to have the guy playing left field for us and hitting clean up.
Yeah, I mean, any American League team that saw what he did this year, you know, you got to jump at that, but it'll be interesting.
White Sox, add him to that lineup they already have.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
Whew. Tony probably knows him well from his leftover St. Louis connections, you know?
Yeah.
Which could be good or bad. Who knows? I just think the Braves, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they just say, okay, we'll bite the bullet and have him play left field if we have to. But if they didn't have Adam Duvall so affordable for 2 more years, that'd be a lot easier to justify. But if you have him next year and you have no DH, that platoon doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it?
Not really.
Ozuna's not a platoon guy. He's got to play every day. He's too good to keep out of
them. The difference he made hitting behind Freddie, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's undeniable. It's just hard to tell what his market's going to be and if the Braves are going to be willing to match it.
You could get a guy to platoon with Duvall, but it wouldn't be a guy like Ozuna, obviously. So
I mean, I'd do anything to have him back if it was me building the team. I wouldn't want to change a single thing about that lineup. Yeah, you know? I mean, just money's a factor in the game.
No doubt. I just think it's going to be, like you said, a slow winter for teams with free agency until that DH issue is resolved. Because a lot of teams are in the same boat. I mean, they know Ozuna, you know, is not good defensively. And a lot of teams, most teams emphasize downfield defense.
Yeah.
You know, in the age of metrics, it's more important than it's ever been.
Well, look at what a difference it made for the Dodgers. The place Bellinger was making, some of them didn't look hard, but he was getting the balls he should not have gotten to. And Betts in right field.
They saved some games with those catches against the Braves and the World Series.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's huge. And the Braves, with their outfield defense next year, could be right there behind the Dodgers if you have
Duvall,
Pache in center, Acuna in right, and Duvall in left. That's top flight right there, man.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. With taking Ozuna's bat out of the middle of that. Ooh,
that hurts. Because, you know, Duvall's really damn good, but he doesn't have quite that same presence that Ozuna has back there. You know, like you'd probably opt to face Duvall over Freddie most of the time. But when Ozuna's as hot as he is, you know, it's then you're picking the matchup whether you want to go lefty, righty, but one of them's getting pitched to.
And it's still big split disparity for Duvall.
Lefty,
righty. But the drop-off in offense from Ozuna to Pache, I mean, I know we can't really judge Pache yet because he hasn't played enough, but that's a huge drop-off.
But Pache was pretty impressive for me. He had good at bats in the playoffs.
Absolutely, he had some really good at bats.
He did.
He could have a good year. Who knows, man? Yeah. I know what they're going to get defensively, though.
Yeah.
Gold Glove caliber defense right from the get go. That's just obvious. Even when he makes like almost routine catches, the way he makes them look. he's just there under the ball. You know,
he just floats.
I haven't seen a guy that reminded me as much as Andrew, ironically, because he's his mentor and played on the same team in the same position. I haven't seen a guy that reminded me of more of Andrew as far as those catches that he makes with a glove to his side.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to make this look as easy as it possibly can. The ball's just going to land in my glove while it's to my side here. It's just – he got that from Andrew, man.
Compared to Andrew so much too, you know. I mean, you could see – I was listening to some of the playoff games, and Smoltz did not want to give him that credit at all. And that's not a knock on Pache. That's just saying how elite and special Andrew is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so he just didn't want to go there and say this guy is as good or even close to it because Andrew's so damn good.
Right.
But to get compared to that center fielder all the time, man, I mean, you can't be compared to a better outfielder.
No. I know a lot of people probably look at Duvall's numbers at the bottom line, you know, the batting average, you know, the OBP, and go, really, is he that good that we'd lose Ozuna for that? And I could see that argument being made, but you also got to remember those games that he had, those 2-3 homer games, that fear that he has when he steps into the box, when he's going like he was this year, and the defense. He's really good defensively, so – And this is no small matter. The contractual control is very affordable.
Yeah,
Duvall is for 2 more years. So DH is huge. They get the DH. I think it's a no brainer. I think if there's a DH, you've got to, even if you have to overpay a little for Ozuna, you have to, because you don't have other needs, man. You can afford to overpay for Ozuna this year, I think, even with the losses you took. So many affordable contracts on your budget.
Well, and then, if you're talking about signing a guy like Wainwright or something, you know?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't be that expensive.
Without spending, you know, $15 to $20 million to fill that rotation spot.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think they shouldn't do it. I'm just not sure if they will. You know, I don't know if they'll pay the price that it's going to cost to get him, even if it is low. But
what do you think it'll be in this market? 3 years, 75?
I have no clue, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I think
that's the numbers that just comes to mind for me for some reason. 3 years, 80, 3 years, 75 for Ozuna.
Where he might get a 5-year deal in a normal offseason.
Absolutely.
But even for him, he's going to have to wait so long finding out if that DH, because like you said, that doubles his suitors.
Yep.
So it's going to be
– he's about 10 teams.
Worst possible offseason for him to do this.
Especially since it could have, if this would have been just 1 year ago, you know,
he would have a 6 year deal right now. He'd be
hit the market to restore his free agent value. He did exactly what he wanted to do, you know, beyond what anybody could have thought.
Yeah.
And then this happens.
Yeah. Timing's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You could always start 2020 with Pache back at AAA, but I just think he showed in the playoffs, you know, that he's ready.
Yeah.
Just that'd be a tough sell, I think. But Braves have done it before. But man, when you step onto the big stage like he did and handle yourself, I know his numbers weren't great in the playoffs, but
he didn't look like he didn't belong. You know, he battled, he had good at bats, he got a few big hits, he had a bomb of a homer. You know, he looked like he belonged in that game, even if he
didn't look overmatched
at all. Which was, you know, I wasn't expecting that because the reports on his offense weren't that great. And then you watch his at-bats, and he didn't look overmatched at all.
And which is amazing when you consider he'd had like two games in the major leagues before that.
Yeah, and he was in the satellite camp and sneaking into games in the big leagues. And all of a sudden you're playing against the Dodgers in the biggest series of your life. And it was impressive for me. It opened my eyes where I believe in him a lot offensively now.
Man, that foul ball that he hit, didn't he hit a foul ball that was like
700 feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got some pop, man.
Yeah.
And he's grown into that because he had no pop 3 years ago when he was skinny.
That happens with a lot of guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at his body and when you see him up close, he's a big guy. He's tall.
Yeah. And he's a power athlete.
Yeah. I could see him being a 25 homer guy for sure with gold glove defense. I could see that.
Man, that's
in the not-too-distant future.
You got to get that answer. You know, it's hard not to start trying to get that answer if you're the Braves and you see that promise out of him.
Sure, absolutely. Also, the Braves are going to need to do something with Ender this winter. He's owed $9 million, $8 million salary next year, and $1 million buyout of his $9 million option in 2022. Yeah. They might have to eat a good chunk of that to move him. They're not going to do the thing where you attach a prospect like Coppy and John Hart did when they were desperate to unload, you know, people.
Yeah, but teams are unloading Brad Hand at $10 million, you know.
I know.
It's
going to be tough.
Probably just got to eat it.
You're going to have to eat some of it for sure. A lot of it, probably. He's been in steady decline, man. I know you love his defense, but it's three seasons now. He's hit .251 with a .321 OBP, .688 OPS over in 1,000 plate appearances over the last 3 years.
Yeah, and if somebody's going to do that, you want it to be Pache because he's cheap and you're at least getting answers about his future. You know, Ender's been going through this up and down of trying to restore value for 2-3 years now. You know, I think they're probably getting pretty close to the point where they want to cut bait.
They pulled the plug pretty much last year because he hit .190 with a .512 OPS, career worst year, lost his job pretty early in the season, and then he was left off the postseason roster. And then they passed him over when Duvall got hurt.
Yeah.
They add Johan Camargo and move Pache into the lineup. That said all they need to know about Ender's future with the team or lack thereof.
Yeah, I agree.
Didn't even add him to the postseason roster at that point. So I don't think carrying him is the answer since Pache at this point is a more dangerous hitter than Inciarte even now with so little experience. So that's obvious. So if you don't re-sign Ozuna – if there's not going to be a DH, do you throw a lot of money, or relatively a lot of money, at finding and adding an ace to a rotation that already includes Freed, Ian Anderson, Soroka, and by early season, if not opening day, and then Wright and Bryce Wilson? I don't think you do.
I think Wainwright would be perfect just because he's not going to cost a lot, and you feel like you get some stability for that young staff, but you got to get. You got to find out what you have in those guys. And for me, I'd probably just pad the bullpen again, just in case, you know, you're in a similar situation. But I bet that's where they'd spend their money if they can't get Ozuna for the price they like.
I agree. Newcomb, I think he could be a non-tender.
How much is he going to cost?
Not a lot. Let's see. What did he make this year? I have to go back and look. I want to say a couple mil.
So he wouldn't be really getting a raise, most likely, you know.
Well, most people are getting raises. You know how that works.
Even in arbitration, if you don't die, you get a raise in arbitration.
Folti, he's a minor league free agent, presumably, because he wasn't even added to the 40-man roster.
Yep.
After clearing waivers and being DFA'd. So it's interesting to see how those situations play out. Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. Adam Wainwright, you've mentioned him. I wrote a story about him this week after I found out that the Braves had talked to him. They haven't acknowledged it yet, but Wainwright did not dispute it. It makes a lot of sense. I know people, you know, they're like, can't we do better? And they have Hamels in there. They have memories of Hamels. This is not a Hamels situation. If you just look at what Wainwright did last year, Hamels was hurt twice in his last year with the Cubs before the Braves signed him. Okay.
Yeah.
And has a history of, you know, a recent history of those injuries. Wainwright is a tough son of a bitch. And last year with the Cardinals, people don't realize he pitched more innings at age 36. He pitched more innings than any of the Braves starters pitched last year. And he averaged more innings per start over like 6.5.
Which is what you need.
Two complete games. He had a 9-inning complete game, 4-hitter.
Yeah, and if he's not, you know, if he's not trying to break the bank just to have him hang around Kyle Wright for a season.
Oh, huge.
I was talking with Cam, our producer, before we started about just when a major league pitcher, a guy with his kind of accolades, tells you something and they give you these compliments and feedback, you know, I think that's the one thing that Kyle doesn't quite have locked down is the confidence in himself. But if he hangs around like a guy like Wainwright, I mean, if you listen to him in the playoffs, the stuff he was saying, he's such a chill guy. He could be a really good influence on some of the young starters. That the guy's done it all, you know?
Yes. All. He's done it all.
I mean, he's almost won a few Cy Youngs. He's won a World Series. He's, you know, he's been, he has so much credit to everything he says that if he sits down and talks to you and tells you how good you are and what you need to change, you know, you're going to listen, but it could be great for him. And if he's not a ton of money, you know, you get that stability and you feel like you can count on a lot of innings and he's generally pretty healthy. I mean, why not? Yeah.
And he's 39. He'll be 39. He was 38 last year. I didn't give him a year. This is a guy that started his career. People forget he was in the bullpen. He was a closer when they lost their closer in the 2006 World Series.
I remember
as a
that.
Rookie. And he was good.
Yeah, he was good.
But he had a career in St. Louis that people don't maybe have forgotten, you know, didn't pay close attention to him there. But he's an icon in St. Louis, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's big in St. Louis. So for them to let him go, a lot of people there will be very disappointed.
Yeah.
When he leaves. But he signed that deal with them last year that was incentive laden. It was not much money at all last year.
Yeah, he was $5 million.
Yeah. So
he's going to want to play for a winner. You know, he's going to want to play for the winner. He loves the Braves. I think
close to home.
It's a situation where you could work out something where the guy just wants to play and he's not really, you know, he's made enough money at this point.
Exactly. He's not a guy that's blown his money. He's made his permanent home with his wife and kids in St. Simon's Island. All his family, most of his friends live there, or I'm sure he's got tons of friends over here in Atlanta, but they can make the drive from St. Simon's. I mean, it just makes a whole lot of sense for him if he doesn't get a better offer elsewhere, you know, a considerably better offer elsewhere, you know, or if a team offered him and Yadi something to come together. But there's so few teams that could use both Yadi Molina and Wainwright.
Yeah.
I don't see Yadi Molina going somewhere and being a backup catcher at this, even at his age. He still caught a ton of games last year, and I don't think the pride thing would allow him to take
a
puny deal and be the backup. And Darno's the Braves catcher, no doubt.
Yeah, after what he did, yeah.
Yeah, a ton better year than Yadi had.
Yeah.
And younger. So I don't think that's going to be a deal breaker, though, because I don't think they were that serious when they mentioned that. You know, somebody said, you know, they had, you know, said on a Zoom call that hey, maybe we'll go somewhere together. That's just one of those things you say that, you know, sure.
Yeah, great, that'd be great if it works out.
Yeah. I just think Wainwright would be, I know we talked about how good an influence Hamels was, and he was on Fried, man. He was really big on Fried last year. Fried and a lot of other young pitchers said the same thing. But Wainwright is that times a couple as far as him being able to relate to all the pitchers and being really talkative and having that gravitas and, you know, and been through so many postseasons and all that with St. Louis, which is kind of a similar baseball town than Atlanta is, you know, and being an Atlanta guy and all that, he knows he's so steeped in the traditions here and all that.
I had jumped right on board.
And he pitched for Snicker in 2003. How about that, man?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you're not going to pay maybe $20 million, or you feel bad paying $20 million for a guy to be a good influence. You know, you want results and production out of him, but if you get him for 3 to 5 and he's decent and he makes a big impact on some of your young starters, it's worth it.
two-time Cy Young Award runner-up, also had two third-place finishes, 15 seasons with the Cardinals. He, 6'7", right-hander. Last year, what did he do last year? He was, well, his career, 167, 98, 3.38 ERA in 393 games, 326 starts, 1,830 strikeouts. Yeah. So he's still got a shot at getting 2,000 strikeouts. I don't think you get it next year, obviously. He's 1,830. Two-time Gold Glove winner. So won a Silver Slugger in 2017. How about that? 25th among active players in WAR. All active players, not just pitchers. 41 WAR, B-WAR. Postseason, he's pitching 28 postseason games, including 15 starts. Has a 2.89 ERA, 118 strikeouts in 109 innings. I mean, this guy's been there, done that, man.
Yeah.
He had back-to-back really mediocre seasons, 4.19 coming off an injury, coming off the Achilles. And then a 5.11 back-to-back season. But then last year, he really had a resurgent year. 5-3, 3.15 ERA, led the majors two complete games. One of them was seven innings, doubleheader. One of them was nine innings, though. 54 strikeouts, 15 walks in 65 innings. He was just solid all around.
Yeah, and it just doesn't scare you at all, because it's not an amount of money that's going to change any other plan. You know, it's like, we got Wainwright, we can't go get Ozuna.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's something, I don't know why it would bother anybody to do that.
And you can explain this a lot better than I can about how he's different than Hamels too, in that he's, in most pitchers at that age, in that he relies so much on that curveball, which just isn't the same as if he was a power pitcher.
Yeah, but you never lose that ability to spin the ball.
Yeah.
And you lose your velo, but you never lose your feel. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't, for me, showing up some good numbers last year, and it's still such a short season, he's not really going to be able to play that into anything. It's just going to be a choice of where he wants to play, and he's going to be looking at the same numbers from every team. I think the Braves got a really good shot at that. I just don't see a reason why not to.
Yeah. And how about the back-to-back clinics, basically, that some Braves pitchers have had, with the changeup that Freed got to learn from Hamels,
yep.
and now the curveball with this guy coming over here, and Freed already has obviously a terrific curveball.
Yeah,
but I mean, the pitchers being able to learn, you'd have two of the best curveballs in the majors on this team then, after having, you know, you would have had two of the best changeups last year.
Well, and you know what's crazy about that, and this is kind of a weird, crazy story. I played with Rick Ankiel, and Rick Ankiel had one of the best curveballs yeah. anybody's ever seen. And he gave me a tip in 2010.
Uh-huh.
This is what I mean by how much these guys can change your career being around them. But, you know, the guys that have tried to work on these pitches so many freaking times, you just learn these little keys and little tips and little thought processes that help you lock in a pitch, and you have these go-to moves you can make when the curveball's not right, or something I can do every time that gets me right. But Ankiel was just throwing to me in the outfield. We were messing around. I was just like, what's your thought process on that? And he goes, I try to have zero arm swing. I try to be as short as possible in the back so that I know my arm's up and I can just pull down. And I wow. rode that tip on my slider for 3 years.
Wow.
I could go to that for my slider for 3 years. Uh-huh. Anytime I was kind of hanging it and spinning it, I just shorten up in the back. And it made it so much easier for me to get on top wow. of my slider. But just that right there, I mean, I rode that tip from a guy that wasn't even pitching anymore. You know, yeah. he was playing the outfield at that yeah. point. And no one would think, you know, being around Rick Ankiel is going to make you a better pitcher after everything he went through.
Right.
But he gave me one tip, and I rode it for 3 years. And I had that go-to for 3 years on my slider. It got it right almost every time. And it was something where if I was warming up and my slider wasn't there, I never went into the game without my slider, because I could go to that and find it. So that's the type of stuff I'm talking about that I don't know if people really realize. But if you've got a guy that's working on his curveball, even Freed could get – his curveball could get better or more consistent being around Wainwright.
You talk about intangibles that just don't show up anywhere that
right.
you can't quantify. Most people will never even hear stories like that, but they happen all the time.
And how much – there's no way to measure how much that tip – how much of a difference that made in my career having a slider that much more consistent from a tip I got from an outfielder that had the yips 10 years before yeah. that, you know? Hey, there's
yips
no way to measure
that stuff.
No, right. it didn't. So that tip right there for me it changed my career, just having a random conversation, messing around, begging him to throw me his curveball that he didn't even want to throw anymore because he's, he was over pitching. But just that little conversation, I rode for 3 years of baseball.
Well, just potentially, too, along those lines, the offseason and the pandemic shutdown that Mentor just spent with Tomlin.
Yep.
That what this might mean for Mentor's career.
It
might
Nobody gives it credit, but that changeup could change Mentor's entire trajectory of his career.
The next decade of his life might be entirely different than it would have been if he had not spent that offseason with Tomlin.
Because of a bum reliever, you know, it's just trying to like hang on and stay in the game has this advice for him. You know what I mean?
Yep. He might owe Tomlin a car in about 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that Tomlin's not a bum. I'm saying that in the same way I'd say it about myself. Yeah. But, you know, just a guy that's just trying to hang on and stay in the game still has this something to offer a guy like Mentor that changes his career. That's that veteran presence people like to shake their head about, but it's a real thing.
Yeah, I think you bet Tomlin back in some role, even if you don't want him back as a pitcher, if you could convince him to come back in a advisory role, you know, in a roving role or something.
Anything. Just have those guys around.
Keep him around. Wainwright also, he's come back from Tommy John surgery, missed a season with that. And this is, you know, I know you said you don't pay guys to be good guys or to be leadership and all that, but it's one of those things you consider. How about the fact that he came back from Achilles tendon surgery in 5 months, which is like 4 months faster than the best projection was. He did it in April and came back for the postseason, which was ridiculous. But how about to have him in those last couple of months for Soroka coming back from Achilles surgery? So Soroka has some twinge or something one day steps wrong and he gets all worried. How about having this guy right there to go, don't worry about it, man. Here's what's going to happen, you know?
I mean, it was really nice for me going through Tommy John to be able to ask Johnny questions. Yeah. You know, you kind of panic about this or this thing doesn't feel right. And they can tell you, you know, if it feels like this, it's not a big deal. If it feels like that, you might want to see the trainer. But you can get kind of some insight that you're not going to get from somebody who's never been through it. I didn't even make that connection yet.
And there might be two or three guys on a typical pitching staff that you could talk to about TJ surgery. But there's only a handful of guys in the game that came back from Achilles tendon surgery, especially pitchers.
Barely any.
Yeah.
Grilly's not around. I mean,
to me, that's huge for him to be able to talk to him because Soroka is so much a huge part of your future.
Yeah.
That to have a guy right there to be able to help him through that.
A guy that could tell him not to push it if he's feeling something. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So I think that's big, man. I think it's got to be a consideration at least. So, and by the way, Soroka's supposedly reports are all great about him, which you figured they would be, you know, as far as diligent as he is, as far as how hard he works and all that.
Yeah.
But he's aiming towards Alex Anthopoulos said he will be throwing during spring training and he's aiming for opening day, but they've all agreed that if it takes two or three extra weeks rather than push it and be ready for opening day, that's what they're going to do. And Soroka's on board with that. So.
For me, the benefit of him taking his time, too, is you get more time to get a few answers on Wright and Wilson.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
sure.
It opens up an opportunity for them to kind of prove some things.
Especially considering if you bring in a guy, you're going to add somebody like a Wainwright or whoever.
Yeah, if you bring Wainwright, that's one less spot for those guys.
Right. There's going to be one of those guys that's going to get squeezed out. So to not have Soroka on the opening day, which ideally you want him there, but it does give you a chance. Kind of like last year when you had a chance
to try some guys. I don't feel like it's urgent. You know, you're going to have a full season next year, hopefully, that over 5 months of Soroka would be enough.
Braves have the makings of a formidable rotation, I think, when Soroka joins Max Fried, who was 7-0 with a 2.25 ERA and 11 starts. Ian Anderson, who had a 1.95 ERA and 6 starts, 41 strikeouts, 1 homer allowed in 32 innings. And then the late season strides, like we talked about with Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson, that's the makings are there for a really good rotation for next year and the next couple of years elite after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just they stay healthy and I think so just because of the stability factor. You know, I mean, both those guys could fall on their face and then you're back to a situation where you got Anderson and Fried are your only guys you can count on.
Right. Right.
You know, and
after the season they just went through.
Yeah. You kind of want to have some stability there.
They had six guys projected for the five spots. You lost all of them. Yeah. Even Fried was out for 2 weeks, but you lost the other five for like most of the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's crazy. It's crazy. The more you look at that and consider what happened, the more amazing it is that they came within two runs of going to the World Series. And then they could have won the World Series.
But look at what they went through. I think if Soroka was healthy, and you're up 3-1,
yeah.
you throw him out there.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you know who a couple of Wainwright's teammates were in 2003 with Snickers AA Greenville, South Carolina team?
Who?
Adam LaRoche and Kelly Johnson.
No way. He's still here. He's still going.
Old Roachy. He's still going. yeah, they traded him December 13th, 2003. Yeah, right after that season. With Ray King and Jason Marquis to the Cardinals for J.D. Drew and Eli Marrero. J.D. Drew was terrific in his 1 year with the Braves. Helped him win a division, get to the postseason, but it didn't that was it. They got 1 year out of him, and the Cardinals got 15 out of Wainwright. So that's the trade-off, man.
That's one of those ones you can look back and say you lost.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody would have had. I mean, they knew Wainwright was a really good prospect, but yeah, it's tough trading. It's tough trading starting pitching prospects, man, because that's the kind of thing they could have those 10 years. And they could last so long if they're really good. But, you know, then again, more often than not, they don't work out. So,
yeah, if you get the World Series, it's always worth it.
Yeah, exactly. If the Braves had made the World Series that year with J.D. Drew, it would have been worth it.
Everybody would be over it.
He had the best year of his career that year. And he played the most he'd ever played after Chipper called him out at the start of the season for not playing hurt. He was in the lineup the rest of the year. Chipper called him out. Yeah. JD was known at that time as not being a guy that wanted to play if he was hurt, if he was dinged up. And we were, you know, 2 weeks into the season, and Chipper said, you know, JD had, you know, he got scratched again from the lineup. And Chipper said, look, JD's obviously a guy that doesn't want to play unless he's 100%. But we're all dinged up. Once spring training, you know, it's over. Nobody's 100% once the season gets going. So you got to decide, are you hurt? Are you just sore? So that's just.
Yeah, I remember him having that conversation with Hayward, too.
Yes, yes. He said both of them publicly in the media. Hayward got back from his rehab stint down at Florida, where he was down there. Yeah. And J.D. Drew was back in the lineup the next day and played the rest of the year without an injury.
Yep.
So look at the numbers. That year, J.D. Drew played more than he ever played in his career. So. But, yeah, man, I was just looking over Wainwright's numbers in St. Louis. God, he had some huge years there, man. Yeah. In the 2 years before TJ surgery, the guy had 19 wins and a 2.63 ERA in 2009. Then he had 20 wins and a 2.42 ERA in 2010. 2011, he misses the whole year after blowing out his Achilles or blowing out his elbow in spring training. So he misses that whole year. Then he has, you know, 14-13 with a then career high 3.94 in his first year back from TJ. Then the 2 years after that, same as before, 19-9, 2.94 ERA, 20-9, 2.38 ERA in 2014. So he had a run there that was only interrupted by TJ, where he was 19-20 win pitcher with an ERA, you know, in the low twos most of the time.
Yeah.
Pretty damn strong. So anyway. Since signing Trevor Bauer seems like it's going to be out of the Braves' price range, at least to me at this point. Maybe they'll surprise me and give him that one-year $30 million deal that he's going to probably get from somebody. But I just don't see it at this point. Not with the needs they have. And Marcus Stroman, by the way, I've heard some people saying go after Marcus Stroman. He got the qualifying offer from the Mets, so $18.9 million qualifying offer, 18.9. So he's going to cost a draft pick for any team that signs him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, unless Bauer, I mean, I guess he's supposed to stick to this 1 year deal thing, but even then, you know,
he's flirting with everybody.
Soroka, Fried, and he is, but you get Soroka, Fried, and Anderson in a playoff series. I don't know if you need Bauer for 30 mil.
No, yeah. Not with what your payroll is going to probably be next year. I mean, if they were to take a step back, I'm just spitballing here and go to say 120, 130 million. It's hard to give a starting pitcher a quarter of your payroll, especially when Freddie Freeman's coming up for that extension, you know?
Yeah. Which I think that's going to have, I think that'll wait too.
Yeah. And Freddie will let it wait. If you just tell him, hey, you understand what's going on, right? We'll do this next year. We'll do it. Don't worry. Well before, you know,
It's so nice to have Freddie. If you're the organization and you know he wants to be there, you know he's going to be realistic. You pretty much know he's going to take a discount, and as long as it's realistic, it's going to get done.
But if I'm his agent, man, I tell them, what if Freddie, God forbid, you know, some pitcher steps on his ankle at first base this year? Yeah. You guys going to guarantee us this thing is coming regardless? That's what I – if I'm his agent, I'm getting some kind of guarantee, man.
No, and you don't want to piss him off. You know, I mean, he's going to be pretty hard to piss off, but you don't want to piss him off into a situation where he's like, all right, you know, fine. I'm going to go out on the market and get $30 million a year.
Right. I mean, that's – but if you're him at this point of his career and you look around and you see some guys get hurt, whether it be in football, baseball, whatever, and, you know, and waiting for that – big extension that team says is coming. It's kind of hard to put it off if you don't have some kind of guarantees that, you know, they're going to do it regardless.
He's got 100 million guarantees in the bank already. You know, he can wait if he wants to.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know,
135, whatever he made. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, but he's good already. So it's more of a,
and it might behoove him to wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might get a lot bigger deal a year from now, you know, when he's
I don't even know what he wants, or he'll be what, 32? 30.
Yeah, he's 30 now.
So I wouldn't even know what he'd want or how many years it'd look like or what he'd get on the free agent market, but I know a lot of teams would love to have that guy.
I know, exactly. Exactly.
So you got to be, you know, you can't try to take too much advantage of it to the point where you bother him, but I think he's going to be, you know,
they're not going to do that.
No.
They're not going to screw
it'll get
him
done.
With it.
No.
It's going to be like the Chipper
it's
situation.
It's so cool. It's so cool to have a guy wear one jersey the whole career, you know.
Yeah.
You know doesn't he wants that. Anymore. They want that.
Doesn't happen. And look at Betts.
Yeah. He should have.
I could see Freddie getting 5 years.
Yeah.
And somewhere between 130 and 150 million.
Yeah.
I could see that. $30 million a year might be pushing at that age, but it depends on what the economy. It depends on whether you do it now or you wait a year from now.
That's why it's going to have to wait.
The landscape might change a year from now. Yeah. If you get back to normal or close to normal with fans in the stands, I could see Freddie getting close to $30 million a year, even at that age.
But not certainly an extension, 20, but 25. As a free agent, yeah.
Yeah, certainly the Braves will give him at least 25 a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, which if you're him – $25 million a year over 5 years here is worth more than $30 million in a year in New York or LA. You know,
for sure.
With the taxes,
and it's worth more
and
to
that.
Him. You know, how much money do you need? For me, if I'm different than some guys, but if I had a chance to wear one uniform my whole career and do it the way he's doing it, and it costs you $20 million, $10 million after tax, that'd be a no brainer for me. And I think that's kind of similar to the mindset he'd have.
I do too, and he's talked to Chipper as you know, as one of his good friends and his mentor. He's talked to him so much about how important it was for Chipper that the same importance comes through every time Freddie talks about it. He's open about it, you know. So, but he's also been smart being so open about it too, because he puts the ball in the Braves' court.
Yeah, he does.
He's made it clear I want to play here, and the fans will be in upheaval if they don't make it happen. You know what I mean?
If it doesn't get done, it's not going to be Freddie looking bad.
Exactly. There's only going to be one party looking bad if it doesn't get done, because he's not going to be asking for the top of the pay scale, and he's going to be the reigning MVP probably too.
Yeah.
We're going to find that out next week, by the way. That's going to happen. He's going to be the MVP.
He's got
it. And
I
think Max Fried's going to be a Gold Glove winner tomorrow, Tuesday. Those are handed out.
Good pick off. Fields his position well. I mean, covers those bunts really well. He's a good athlete off the mound.
I think he'll be the only Braves winner, but I do think he'll win. Which is going to ruin? It's going to end. The reign has already ended for Keuchel and Greinke in the NL. They won the last six Gold Gloves in the NL for pitchers.
Yeah, so American League's tough to win the NL one.
All right. Well, that's it. We'll talk again next week. I'm going to have a lot of awards and stuff to talk about, I think, next week. And who knows? Maybe some free agency stuff. The Braves struck early last year. Remember, with a couple of guys, a few guys. Will Smith, Darno, they did early, didn't they? And then there was one other. Hamels. Hamels was pretty early. That was early December.
Yeah, so, I feel like you could see some of the Melanson type of deals, things like that, that I think you could see some of those moves early. But I think big ones, I mean, you're not – I can't see any way Ozuna signs before January.
Yeah, yeah. I could see like a Wainwright.
Yeah.
That getting
that
done
type
early.
Of stuff.
Yeah. guy that wants to get it, know where he's going to be next year, team that wants to get that out of the way, that kind of thing. All right. Well, that'll be it. We'll talk again next week. Appreciate you guys hanging with us and enjoying the show. 755 is real. We're out. All right.